Podcast. I'm Nate Edwards. That's Brandon BK Kylie. This is Before the Box Score. We are in March. Spring football is happening. We got lots of new faces making plays on the football field, and you can go out there and watch them. And we're getting our reports daily, eating them up, consuming everything, because in a very short amount of time, there's going to be nothing else to read about until we get to August. But that's okay. We're still here. BK, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you doing today, my man?
I'm doing pretty well. I think a lot better than most Mizzou basketball fans who seem to hate their team but also think that they should be not a 9 seed, which I don't know. I am personally excited that we're in the tournament, which is something we haven't been able to say for quite some time. But, yeah, I think I'm doing just fine.
Yeah, listen, Mizzou basketball could have had a better draw. We'll go ahead and put it that way. You have a situation where the team is going to face against Gonzaga in the second round, and that's not great. they're probably going to lose that game if they get past Oklahoma in the first round. But, you know, it is what it is. I wish that we could expect better, but we can hope for better from the football team this fall.
I can tell you what, Mizzou football would beat the hell out of Gonzaga football. I know that.
I can concur. I'm not sure that Mizzou football would get there, though, if they had to go up against Oklahoma football in the first round.
Irrelevant. Let the basketball team plays the first round, football team plays the second round. That's how it's always been, BK.
I like that. Okay, I'm into that.
You just alternate until you get to the end. Just randomly speaking of that, I tweeted out after Mizzou lost to Arkansas that it sucks that we lost in the SEC tournament to Arkansas, but at least the Missouri football team hasn't lost to Arkansas in 5 years, right? Harmless, like, hey, just feel better, guys. We're okay. The number of insane Arkansas fans who jumped in my mentions and started talking about freaking track and field and how Arkansas sports are infinitely better than Missouri sports in every aspect was just flabbergastingly awful. I tweeted that out and immediately went to bed. I woke up with like 56 notifications on the stupid tweet. I was like, what happened? So, Arkansas, y'all are thirsty for a rivalry, and I don't get it.
I can appreciate getting after it a little bit. Now is it necessary? No, but I'm here for it.
I think the best tweet, the best out of context tweet from that entire thing was Missouri doesn't know body parts. And I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole that led to that, but that's where it ended up being. So thank you, Arkansas. You all are dramatic and just beautiful, beautiful people. Anyway, let's talk about some spring football, man. Obviously, the boys have been getting after it for the past couple of weeks. The reports have been coming in. You've had our guys, Cortai has been covering the team very, very well. So has Jacob, talking about seeing what they've seen, showing some video. Talking to Eli and the teams, getting some good stuff from that. Power Mizzou's been there. Dave Matter's been there. A lot of stuff to digest, but really, BK, it kind of just seems to come down to the individual players and the team are performing exactly as we thought they were, which I guess that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, so the really good freshmen that you expected to perform really well coming into camp, hey, newsflash, they have been really good so far at camp. The guys that you thought were going to be really good that transferred in, whether they be JUCO players, they've been quite good so far. Those things where I almost wonder sometimes, is this confirmation bias or is them actually the latter? Because there's no reason to be pessimistic about spring football. All that can happen in the spring is that good things typically happen, unless somebody gets hurt. So this is in for optimism. And so far, there's been nothing to quell that optimism for any Mizzou fan that was excited about what they added in the offseason.
I think it just makes plenty of sense. I mean, Drinkwitz brought in a bunch of young receivers. Why? Because there wasn't a lot of proven receiver talent. What happens? The young receivers look really good. This isn't rocket surgery, right? Oh, wait a second. They brought in a ton of young cornerbacks because they didn't have any cornerback depth, and the young cornerbacks are looking good? Huh. Imagine that. Right. It's good. It's better than saying, wow, we brought in all these guys and they freaking suck. Like, OK, that's certainly the worst case scenario. But it's funny. It's just kind of like, maybe it is confirmation bias, but it's just like, oh, the position of need where a lot of young guys could possibly play, see a lot of young guys succeeding. That's a good thing. That's kind of what we expected. And then, look at the numbers that have been handed out. Mookie Cooper, Dominic Lovett, Tyler Macon got number 10 the other day. Dalen Carnell, a four-star cornerback, got 13 the other day. You know, keep going down, and you've got Daniel Robledo, the JUCO defensive end, defensive tackle. We're not totally sure where he's at. He grabbed the 56. Realist George Jr., he grabbed the 91. Again, two positions where, you know, somebody can step up on the other side. That wasn't a huge position of need, but it's you bring in JUCO guys to play, and, oh, by the way, they're working into the rotation right now. Yeah, that's why you brought them on, man. So, and Zaquan Reeves got number 30 as well. So, like, it's all just making sense. And for a long time, you know, you go into these things, and you're like, I want to be surprised. I want a good storyline. Well, guys, I think the storyline is that Drinkwitz knows what he's doing. He got the talent that he wanted to get in the positions he needed. And so far in 2 weeks, they're doing exactly what they should be doing.
Yeah, I do think, for what it's worth, there are a few that have seemingly even outperformed expectations. Like, everything that I've heard thus far about what Darius Perkins, their junior corner, that he's seemingly great thus far at camp. And that is something that, for me personally, as I watched his, whatever, highlight film, whatever you want to call it, the huddle film that is available for us, I was sure that, personally, Mookie Cooper, I'm two minds on him. I'm a Chiefs fan, so what happens in training camp, and there's a specific player that always shows out every preseason. Every training camp, there's a specific type of receiver that always ends up getting all of the accolades. It's either one, the really, really big guy that goes up and high points the football and looks great when they're not in shoulder pads, or the really, really jitterbug, small, like running back at receiver type that just looks fantastic because they're not tackling to the ground. And I hope that what's happening at Mizzou camp right now is not that Mookie Cooper falls into that latter category. I hope he's actually really good. But that's my one hesitation to buy in full force. Because so far, the reports that you hear, man, from people that have been at Mizzou camp thus far, and let's remember, take this with a grain of salt because they don't see everything, are basically that he looks awesome. And Eli Drinkwitz, anytime that he's asked that have stood out to him, Cooper, out of his mouth. That's worth something. Anytime that they were asked, who's standing out to one. So, not real, but...
Yeah, and we know how Kiki Chisholm performed at the beginning of the season. It was mostly not there. So, yeah, you don't want to take lessons learned in spring ball and apply them to a full SEC schedule, right? Like, that's probably not going to happen. But the point is that he is seeing the field, he is being utilized, and he's being utilized enough that you're thinking, okay, regardless of what we see or don't see, the coaches clearly have a want to have him on the field. Like, he is proving that he is probably one of the better athletes in the receiver room right mm-hmm. now. So that's a good thing. You want your four stars, your five stars to play really, really well. As far as rotation, as far as usage and like packages that he comes in or like routes that he runs, like, yeah, we're going to figure this out. We're going to see it when the games happen, and he's going to drop some balls. He's going to run some run routes, and he's not going to run block super well. And like, we'll get to all that, but you know, it's at least refreshing that I feel like from just a lizard brain kind of simplistic view, you know, oh, well, the good guys are going to make their way to the top. And then sometimes we get confused when some two or three star is hogging the starts, but like, that's not the case here. the young talented guy has made his way clearly to the high usage rate. So we can expect to see him in the fall. And that's the promise there is just, it's exciting.
It is, and it's worth getting excited about. And I got to be honest, man, if I'm going to make a bold prediction here on, what is it, March 16th as we're recording, I think he's going to start. I think Mookie Cooper, based on everything that we've heard thus far, and it's no longer super early in camp, this is the last week of spring ball. They're going to have their spring game on Saturday, and from what I understand, I think that's kind of it, at least until they get back for workouts. They'll do those throughout the offseason. But in terms of organized football, this is basically the end of what they're going to be doing for a little while. And he's taken a lot of reps, and he looks great. And the coaches are raving about not just what he's been doing, but also the work ethic. I listened to an interview with Eli Drinkwitz recently, and he was talking about how he, after the first practice, came to Eli Drinkwitz and said, hey, what's our install for tomorrow? I want to get a head start on it. That's the kind of thing you want to be hearing about these types of players, because that shows not just that he's looking great on the field, but also that he's putting in the work in the classroom, right, so to speak. So I think he's going to start, man. I think you're going to see, like, in terms of the most reps out there, Kiki should be number one. I think Towski Dove, if I had to put money on it, would probably be number two for me. I think Mookie Cooper is probably going to be number three. And then number four is going to be a battle between Jalen Knox, Barrett Bannister. I think you could maybe see Dominic Lovett work his way into that mix and the mix.
It's just it's such a bulkhead of 5'10 dudes at the receiver position. And Jalen Knox isn't getting any work because he's injured for all of spring. But yeah, every good receiver that we have is under 6 foot tall. So I don't know how they're going to work him in. Yeah, it's going to be a battle. But if Mookie Cooper has separated himself to the point where he's getting the majority of the reps here, that's probably a good indicator that we're going to see a lot of him, which we should. That should absolutely happen. So really, kind of coming into spring, you're like, how do the young freshman receivers look, plus Cooper? How does the secondary look? And so far we've seen, Jadarius Perkins. See a lot of heavy rotation there. Zaquan Reeves earned his number early. Now, keep in mind, Jarvis Ware is also not participating in spring. So there's a chance that, some of this is because he's not there. Same on the safety core. Jelani Williams isn't playing. So you see Chris Sheeran getting a lot of starts with the ones who sat out last year. So it's kind of surprising to see him. You also see, Mason Pack back there.
It's also telling that you're seeing him back, and now he's starting. I think that tells you something, that what they thought of him as a player.
And Sean Robinson, that story's still going on. I know he's seen a lot of play in safety, and really it kind of seems like from what do they call it? The all-interview team. Certainly the writers are rooting for Sean Robinson, but it's a unique story. It would be cool. I know we've talked about this and like, hey, maybe it's not a super great thing if he's one of your top three safeties, but just from a human interest standpoint, from a you want a guy to succeed standpoint, it is cool that Sean Robinson is so far holding his own as the second team safety and still seeing some action.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome storyline. I also am kind of happy that he's not starting in a weird way. Like, if he was immediately thrust in as the starter, I would have some questions as to what's going on with the guys that, were recruited as safeties coming into this offseason. I'm really interested to see how this works itself out, because I'm happy to see Chris Sheeran in the slot. He's kind of a corner by trade. So I think that makes a lot of sense to me. JC Carlisle as your starting free safety right now, I wonder if it continues to be that way when you get Jelani Williams back. I would think not, but I'm not sure. I think there's going to be a lot of rotation early in the year in the secondary. I think if you're looking for one spot on the roster right now that I don't think is settled, I think that's it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really interested to see how it works its way out, because you have so many intriguing options, especially at corner. If Jadarius Perkins is better than I gave him credit for, and if they hit on Carnell, the freshman, who I think is awesome coming out of Indianapolis, made some really intriguing to pair with Enos Rakestraw. That could be a lot of fun to watch at corner.
I mean, you got to think of this from a breaking in standpoint, especially in the secondary. Does the schedule give you time to figure out what you have? Well, not really. You should probably have it figured out by fall. There's not going to be a lot of game reps to get you going, because while Missouri does open September 4th with Central Michigan at home, the very next week they go to Lexington, Kentucky, and you're at Kentucky in a division game. So I know the Wildcats aren't going to throw it all over the field, but like, you can't just screw around and still be working on rotations the second game in. You get SEMO after that, and then you got to go to Boston College, which will abuse you through the air. So they really got to figure it out now. And if there's a rotation, that's fine. If you kind of just have positional safeties or positional corners or however you want to do it, but you got to find at least one corner that you can rely on, whether that's Perkins, whether that's Ware or Rakestraw. You got to find, you know, you got Martez Manuel, who's kind of all over the place. You got to find at least one deep safety who can provide some extra coverage now, because once you get into August, you really got to figure that stuff out, and you got one game to prep, and then it's go time.
Yeah, they need to figure that out early, and the other thing that they're going to have to figure out is their rotation along the defensive line, because you have a lot of guys coming back along that defensive line, man. If there's one place that you're going next year, and that doesn't always mean good players, but experience nonetheless, it's along the defensive line. You've got Chris Turner coming back, Kobe Whiteside is back, Markell Utsi is back, Kale Byers is back. All of those dudes could have been gone if they wanted to be, but they're back for another year, and honestly, it's a good thing for Mizzou that they're back, because at worst, that's really nice depth. At best, maybe they take another step forward. You get a really good year out of Kobe Whiteside now that he's healthy. Utsi was pretty strong against the run when he was healthy last year. And Kale Byers, I don't know what went on with him last year, but he's shown some promise in the past. I find it really interesting that you saw a guy like Realist George get some playing time with the ones at the most recent open practice. Yeah. Daniel Robledo is kind of mixing his way in at defensive end as well. Johnny Walker got some time with the ones, apparently. Ben Key got some opportunities with the ones. They've got a lot of guys along the defensive line. You can only play so many of those guys, though, in a game. And so that's another spot. Like, as much as safety is uncertain right now, defensive line is more certain. I kind of have more certainty about who these players are and what they've done for me in the past. It's every bit as uncertain, though, in terms of who's actually going to get the playing time once you get onto the field.
I do wonder about that. I mean, regardless of who was going to be on this staff, you had so many returning guys, and those returning guys were injured, various forms of injured last year, you knew there was going to be a lot of tryout in the spring. Add to that, on top of that, you have a brand new defensive staff along the defensive line, in the secondary, and coordinating the entire defense. So, like, it kind of feels to me that, yes, you're going to have to figure out what pieces you have regardless, especially guys who just didn't see much action. But this staff needs to see them with their own eyes. So, am I going to have long-term takes because Ben Key got some reps with the one? No. But the fact that he's getting that opportunity is good. They always go into spring ball saying, hey, you know, every position's open. It's always an open tryout. No one's guaranteed anything, blah, blah, blah. Yes, yes, yes. This is really the case this year. So you can really see that those effects happening now. And I got to believe that as we get into fall, the Ben Keys, the Realist Georges, you know, unless they're really good, are going to see less reps with the ones, and you're going to start seeing a more a finalized course start to take shape halfway through August. But for now, it is fun just to kind of see them get that work and the potential of some new guys getting some heavy playing time.
Yeah, I think George has a chance. You don't bring him in if you don't think that he's going to fit into your rotation in any way, shape, or form.
But he's just such a question mark because he played fullback and now he's a defensive lineman. Like, it's kind of like, what is he? What can he do, you know?
Question, and I don't know is the answer for like, I kind of know what you're going to get, or at least I feel like I do, out of Akil Byers. I'm kind of more intrigued could get out of Realist George. Like, could he be more of a pass rush impact guy, especially on passing downs in the interior? Maybe. And I'm interested to find out if that is the case. Like, could you put him and Darius Robinson out there, for example, on third downs on the interior? I'd like to see what that looks like. Could you do that with Trajan Jeffcoat? I'd like to see what that looks like. So I'm here for it. I'm here for the experimentation. And this is the time when you do stuff like that. You're right. You find out what exactly these guys can give. You want to see what they look like. Like, I want to see what Realist George looks like in the interior when he's next to Kobe Whiteside, as opposed to when he's lined up in the interior with Ben Key, right? I don't want to see him with the threes. I want to see what he looks like when he's got somebody next to him that can take away some of those double teams, because that's what he would have if he was in a game. So I'm happy to see that this team is willing to experiment with some of those lineups on the interior, especially.
And, of course, you know, every practice, every time we get to spring ball and we get into fall ball, the question inevitably rotates to quarterbacks and how the quarterbacks are performing. We've talked before, Connor Bazelak, the reigning co-SEC freshman of the year, Connor Bazelak, saying that he wants to work on the deep ball during this offseason. Thank you, Connor. Yes, you do need to do that. I hope he and the receivers are playing 500 a lot after practice and really getting their nine routes down. But when we talked about this, Bazelak should be the starter. We fully expect him to be the starter, barring some kind of injury. The curious story is, of course, in the backup. And I think I've seen a couple of stories written about the battle between Brady Cook and Tyler Macon. A friendly battle, mind you. They're obviously very supportive of each other. They're on the same team. But they are vying for playing time. They are vying for snaps. It sounds like Cook has done very well running the offense through, I think, the twos and the ones. Macon got some shot with the starting offense as well. Seeing that he got sacked like three or four times is disheartening. But the fact that he also scrambled and made some big plays, 10, 15-yard gains on the ground, is kind of like that hinting at that athleticism that gained him a four-star notoriety and made such a big deal when we got him signed. He earned the number 10, the old Chase Daniel. So it'll.
Ooh, that's a bold number to select.
It really is. I was kind of surprised, but I like it. So it's interesting to see what he can do. I've seen a few snippets of video and where he was kind of throwing the ball out of bounds, which tells me nothing. But the hint of athleticism, the hint of what can be, is around the corner. I'm really curious what we find out as we get back into August.
Yeah. It's been interesting to me because, so I wrote an article on Rock Am. If anybody wants to check it out, you can check it out on the website about how Mizzou's got a good problem right now, right? And we talked about this the last podcast around as well. Like, if you can have three good quarterbacks, you take three quality quarterbacks and you figure it out from there. I didn't mention Brady Cook in that discussion, and maybe that's unfair of me to do so, but again, this is probably unfair, and I'm not trying to take a shot at Brady Cook, but in terms of the lineage, the pedigree, there's just nothing to suggest that Brady Cook is going to beat out these guys in a battle long. Brady Cook this year, hold off Tyler Macon. Absolutely. He 100% could. Maybe Tyler Macon, it takes him a little longer to get a grasp of the offense. He's not fully there yet. And if, God forbid, in any given game, Connor Bazelak went down, or if he was out for an extended period of time, maybe Drinkwitz this year would feel more comfortable handing over the offense to Brady Cook than he would to Tyler Macon. That does not mean that Brady Cook would be the long-term answer, though, over Tyler Macon. I'd be very surprised if that were the case. So that's kind of where I'm at with those two guys. I wouldn't be surprised if Brady Cook is the backup this year. I would be very surprised if he is, in an extended period of time after the 2021 season, listed over Tyler Macon.
Especially with Sam Horn coming in.
Correct.
You just got to have to figure it. Like, nothing against Brady Cook, but based off of projected potential, you would probably put Macon and Horn above Cook. Now, we can say the same
thing
about
Bazelak.
Connor Bazelak
beat him out last year.
That's true. That's absolutely true. You know, Bazelak did not come in with like a huge amount of fanfare. Obviously, he was backing up Kelly Bryant in 2019, but like, you never know with these sort of things. But just based off of potential, from what they did in high school, you would expect Brady Cook to find himself towards the bottom. And who knows? Maybe he just has a really good grasp of the offense and holds on to the second spot. But you do have a lot of blue chip talent coming in, so it's fair to expect them to start. And that's, yeah, like you said, that's not a shot against Cook. That's just a commentary on how well Drinkwitz has recruited the quarterback position.
Yeah, and even if you did look at, like, you go back to the pedigree, I know Connor Bazelak didn't have a fanfare, but he was rated pretty high recruiting services. I mean, he was listed as the 24th.
He was a four-star.
Yeah, he was listed as the 24th overall quarterback, pro style at least, by Rivals. So he was rated pretty highly. He was a 5'7" three-star. I guess Brady Cook was too, technically. I guess I underestimate what Brady Cook is. Maybe this is a me problem more than a Brady Cook problem. I just didn't view him that way because he was kind of more of a late recruit as opposed to a guy like Connor Cook, who came on early, Tyler Macon, who had a ton of fanfare and while at one point was a three-star, was considered to be one of the best quarterback prospects in the country. Maybe I'm being unfair to Brady Cook, and I hope he's fantastic and he ends up beating everybody out and he is an all-SEC player. That'd be the best thing for all of us, right? But I'm still in I'm kind of in a holding pattern with him right now. I mean, his other big offers were Austin Peay, Lindenwood, Southern Illinois, and Arkansas State.
Is that good?
See, that's my thing. Like, Rivals had him listed as a 5'7" 3 star, but when you look at the offers, it's like, is this a 5'7" 3 star? Typically, you don't see Lindenwood listed as an option when you have a 5'7" 3 star for a top 20 quarterback in the country. That's all I'm saying.
Usually no. But yeah, I mean, if you got to have blue chip recruits, you want those blue chip recruits to be at positions of big importance. And that's, you know, defensive end, that's wide receiver, that's cornerback, and that's quarterback. And so clearly Drinkwitz has gotten some blue chip ends, some blue chip corners, and some blue chip receivers coming in. And of course, the blue chip quarterbacks are also very important. Speaking of which, BK, I'm doing a little series here.
Oh, I've been seeing this. It's been fun.
I have forgotten some of these guys that walking through kind of a history lesson of blue chip quarterbacks. But what I'm looking at is Midwestern blue chip quarterbacks at Midwestern schools from 2000 to 2015. If you haven't read it yet, it is on Rocking Nation. You could go check it out. The second one just dropped today. The third will drop next week. There are some guys I didn't realize were from the Midwest initially. There are some that whose entire careers I had forgotten. And there are some big names that I remember from the recruiting trail that, you know, just that like made a splash. They were so good, and then just completely disappeared, and I forgot they existed in my life. But the whole exercise is to give us a good idea, or a better idea, more educated idea, of what the potential of Connor Bazelak and Tyler Macon can be, because both of those guys are Midwestern blue chip quarterbacks who signed with a Midwestern school, in this case, Missouri. So if you go back to 2000 and you look at every single blue chip that's a four-star or five-star quarterback that was produced by a Midwestern high school that signed with a Midwestern college, you got about 11 in the 2000 to 2008 sample, and you got 12 in the 2009 to 2015 sample. So not a whole lot out of like 52 guys. BK, it's really weird because you look at the college career and you pair it with the NFL career. Like if you look at those two as one continuous career, the best quarterback to come out of the Midwest that played for a Midwestern school is Kyle Orton.
Uh-huh.
And most of that is just because he got to stick around in the NFL for like, you know, 10 years. But he had a hell of a career at Purdue with Joe Tiller's spread offense. And then he had a decent career numbers-wise at Chicago and Denver. And I'm like, to me, Kyle Orton was always kind of a punchline of a quarterback, but apparently the dude was pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he was solid in the NFL. He was one of those guys. It's kind of like a Ryan Fitzpatrick nowadays, where if he's your starting quarterback, you're always going to want to upgrade. But you can win a few games with him as your starting quarterback. You didn't have an issue with that at the time. And he had some really good years with the Bears. He had a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken, with the Chiefs, where he was kind of a frisky guy back there.
Yeah.
He was a fun player, man. He had a little bit of Jay Cutler to his game where he was not afraid to take a shot. And that sometimes came back to haunt him, but you know, it's part of also what led him to be kind of a fan favorite as a backup at times as well. Another guy on your list, especially from the 2000s that I really hadn't thought about a whole lot, is Josh Freeman. God, what a strange career he had, because he was really good early on. I think if it was either his rookie year or his second year, he was awesome for Tampa Bay. And then it was just over. Like, without really any sort of precedent, his career just took an end. It was wild, man. He was there. He was starting for 16 games, and then he got traded, and then it was over within, like, two seasons. I'm not sure that I've ever seen a career quite like his.
Some of these names, like Troy Smith. So, why, some consider the worst Heisman Trophy winner of all time. which, you know, whatever you believe, that that's fine. He certainly had the most accomplished career. He won a Big Ten title. He went to a national championship. He won the Heisman. He won a boatload of other trophies. Goes to the NFL. Goes 4-4 in 8 starts. Never hear from him again.
Yeah, he just didn't have the size.
Yeah.
I wonder what he would be like if he was in today's game.
That's a good question. That's a solid question. But, you know, Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn had an incredible career at Notre Dame. Now, the joke was always they couldn't win a BCS bowl, which, okay. But he threw for over almost 12,000 yards, 95 touchdowns, went 30-19 as a starter, got drafted by the Browns, and football died.
Yep.
Right? You know, DeShone Kizer, who had a really another Notre Dame guy who had a really weird college career. Tremendous performance. Team sucked. Goes to Cleveland. Dies. He was the quarterback for that 0-15 team, and
yep.
Now he's a practice star. But basically, it's like, if you're a Midwest quarterback, don't get picked by the Browns. Or just any quarterback, don't be picked by the Browns. But, you know, we got a lot of guys on here like Chase Patton, Missouri's favorite dentist, right? Like, he was a thing, and then, you know.
By the way, were you surprised at all at how many of these guys went to Mizzou?
Yeah, that's one of my big takeaways for next week. Like, we go back and we're like, you know, Pinkel's recruiting. We always talk about, you know, getting the underrated, you know, the diamonds in the rough. And for, man, when he hit on the big recruits, it was typically a quarterback.
Yeah.
And that was impressive. That I think we forget about how good he was at getting the local blue chip talent to stick around.
I mean, you look at this, and at the same time that you had Chase Daniel, he goes out and gets Chase Patton. I understand, like, that now it's a punchline, right? The Heisman and the future NFL star, the front of the Sports Illustrated cover. But like that's a big get to be able to get that guy to come to the hometown school. Blaine Gabbert, that was a big-time get. Blaine Dalton was right around that same time. And I know, again, that's kind of a punchline now, but it was a big get at the time. Matty Mock was a massive get. And same thing with Drew Locke. And you keep going and going. And this is just, for as much as we talk about the underrated success like you're talking about with those lower-level recruits, it was always about the quarterback. And anytime you talk to Gary Pinkel, he would acknowledge that. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a program. And that's something that I think we're clearly seeing Eli Drinkwitz understands as well. And he's been implementing some of those same philosophies into his program. I don't know that that was 100% there under Barry Odom.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, a lot of these, especially when you look at the jump to the NFL, I broke it down 2000 to 2008 and then 2009 to 2015. That first sample size had 8 guys go into the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of quarterbacks were they? They were all like more your pocket passers. Yes, Troy Smith was mobile. Yes, Justin Zwick had some wheels, right? Josh Freeman had some mobility to him, but most of them were big
dudes. But he was a pocket
dudes.
Passer. Yeah, even though he was big and he could run, he was a pocket passer.
They were big dudes who could throw. That second class that I was looking at, 09 to 15, and 15 was the arbitrary stop point because that was the last person who graduated from college and made it to the NFL. 31 blue chip quarterbacks in the 09-15 Midwestern quarterbacks at Midwestern schools. 31 were produced, only 12 signed with a Midwestern school, and only 3 made it in the NFL. And those 3 were from the 15 class.
It's crazy.
And like they're Clayton Thorson, who's a smaller guy, but super accurate. DeShone Kizer, more of a mobile guy. And then Drew Locke. And we know Drew Locke. So it's like maybe it's the style of quarterback that the Midwest produces, or maybe it's just the teams that they end up on. But like, I know if you look at any sample of region, the vast majority of the quarterbacks in that region are not going to do well in the NFL. That's just what the NFL does. But man, they have not had a lot of success just getting drafted in the first place. And I thought the dichotomy between those sample sizes was really interesting.
Yeah, it is kind of wild to see, and the stark contrast between the two, because there's really nothing that should have hindered that second class from being more successful in the NFL. But then you look through some of the names, like, I mean, some of these guys were just colossal failures in college football. Gunnar Kiel, you look back on that, and it's like, man, what happened to that guy in college? Because he was supposed to be a star. Nathan Shielhaus, maybe not to that same degree, but like he was always the smart guy that it was, okay, college is probably going to be the end for him. So there's some of these guys that you could have seen it coming for. Matty Mock, he was never going to be an NFL quarterback because of his size. But other guys, it's like, man, what? How come it didn't click for them? Like, how come DeShone Kizer never made it work in the NFL? I'm not sure we'll ever know the answer to that question, maybe someday, but it's crazy, man, because these quarterback evaluations, there's just so much that goes into the position. It's about more than just your skills. There are so many intangibles. How can you command a huddle? How can you command a locker room for that instance? How can you understand and conceptualize what you're trying to do on the football field when it comes to the game plan? Like, can you internalize something on a Friday and then go implement it into the game plan on Saturday and then eventually on Sundays? There's so much more than just, are you accurate? Can you throw the ball with any sort of significant arm strength? It's about much more than just that. And I think Absolutely. This shows that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the fault of the schools or of the region either. It's just some guys get it, some guys don't. And, you know, you look kind of towards the near future, like a Brandon Peters, who signed with Michigan outside of once he graduated from high school, but he's currently at Illinois. He's a big enough dude that I think some people might be interested in him. He's from Avon, Indiana, but who knows? I mean, he's at Illinois. Graham Mertz at Wisconsin. He showed a lot of promise in a few games at Wisconsin last year. He's from Overland Park, Kansas. But, you know, 6'4", 205, I'm sure he's put on some extra pounds. That's another guy to look that possibly gets an NFL look. Our own Connor Bazelak, that's a guy that might make it. J.J. McCarthy at Michigan. Obviously, our own Tyler Macon. Jake Rubley at Kansas State. Donovan McCulley at Indiana. Like, I mean, you've got some guys who are still being produced. Like, there's a lot of them. It's just the NFL is the great equalizer. And some of these guys, whatever it is, they can't cut it. And so we're sitting here thinking, oh, wow, I hope Connor Bazelak and or Tyler Macon has the career of Kyle Lorton, which is, you know, it seems kind of weird. But from a business standpoint, hell yeah. Get a couple years of starting. Be a backup for the rest of your life. Get that Chase Daniel kind of money.
I was about to say, that's the career you want.
That's the career, man. Hold that clipboard for $10 million a year. Hell yeah. Let's get it, man. Like, that's awesome. But it also kind of shows you the realistic ceiling for a lot of guys in the NFL, which is a backup that is in high demand during the offseason and makes a ton of money.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, it's just so hard to know who's going to hit, right? Because, so let's go through, I'm just looking through right now, the top 10 quarterbacks last year in passing yards in the NFL, okay?
Sure.
So you've got Deshaun Watson. That was an easy evaluation. He was a top prospect coming out. He ended up being amazing. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes. Nobody could have seen that coming. He went to Texas Tech out of high school. I think he was a 3-star recruit, if I'm not mm-hmm. mistaken. And he was as much
guy.
A baseball player as he was a football player yep. in high school. Nobody yep. saw that. Tom Brady. Nobody California. Saw this coming. He's from California, and he barely started at Michigan. They wanted to replace him at Michigan. Mm-hmm. So he ended up going in the 6th round. Nobody saw this coming from him. Matt Ryan. I don't remember what his prospect status was, but he went to Boston College.
I think he was pretty good high school recruit, if I remember correctly.
Matt Ryan, let's check this out. 2003 was his year when he came out of high school.
Oh, crap. He's 3-star according to Rivals. Damn.
There we go. So that's not a guy that you would have expected to be here. Josh Allen ended up going, if I'm not mistaken, the JUCO route, and then went to Wyoming and ended up being a star in the NFL because he was a late bloomer who just, he worked out, right? Justin Herbert, that's your classic case of a stud. Aaron Rodgers, JUCO again. Kirk Cousins, I don't think was a big-time recruit. Am I mistaken on that?
No, I don't think he was. I know he had a long career at Michigan State. I don't think he was.
He was a solid quarterback in college for sure. He was a 5'5", 3-star.
Oh, my God. He was 6'2", 171.
Yeah.
They were 3-star all the way.
So, I mean, that's not a guy that you would have thought. He's certainly not a blue-chip recruit by any stretch of the imagination. Russell Wilson is next up. He is 9th on this list in passing yards last year. He was a 5.3 2-star quarterback that committed to NC State back in 2006. And then,
another baseball guy.
Exactly. And then finally on the list, it's Philip Rivers. And I'm not even sure they were doing rivals at that point.
No, he would have been.
He would have been right around the 2000. So let's see here. Oh, 24/7 Sports. I don't think. No, they don't have a
class
rating
of 2000.
On it.
No rating.
Yeah.
Nope.
So, I mean, that's kind of, it's a total mixed bag, right? You had multiple JUCO players. You had Patrick Mahomes, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, who were 2- or 3-star recruits. I mean, that's more than half of the list. It's not these 5-star guys that we talk so much about. It's not the 4-star guy. And that doesn't mean that those guys won't also be successful. Kyler Murray's really good. He was the top-rated recruit in his class. Jared Goff was a really highly rated guy. Matt Stafford was a blue chipper back in the day. Those guys can also work out and be really good players in the NFL, but it's so hard to know who's going to eventually work out in the league because there is so much more that goes into this than just the size and the arm.
Really is, and it's a humbling experience, and this is kind of what you get. Obviously, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence mm-hmm. are going to add to the lore of the 5-star awesome quarterbacks, and I'm sure they're going to do just great.
Unless they're not successful. You know, that's the other thing. As much as I think that they're going to be great, they might not be, man. I've been wrong about these guys before that go in the top five. Like, I thought Sam Darnold was going to be pretty good. He stinks. He's no good. So there's no guarantees that they're going to work out either.
Yeah. Who knows, man? This is what's fun about this kind of exercise, though. It really shows you who went where and where they're from, but like just the humbling experience of trying to be an NFL quarterback or just an NFL player in general. It's incredibly difficult. You have to have the right work ethic. You have to have the right ability to study and memorize things quickly and then execute on game day. And some guys have some of those tools, but very few have all of them. And it's really tough to tell in high school how you're going to be as a pro. So we'll see what that means for Connor and Tyler and their careers at Missouri. Hopefully they do well with us and find NFL success. But the main takeaway is that, I don't know.
Shrug
tough
emoji. Hey,
shrug emoji.
One quick aside real quick. Looking down up and down this list. Remember when Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen had a quarterback battle at Texas A&M back in the day? That was fun. That was fun. And then neither of them ended up staying. That was great. Kyle Allen ended up at Houston, and Kyler Murray ended up at Oklahoma. What a time.
Yeah. And Kevin Sumlin ended up in Arizona.
And he's terrible.
That's a conversation for some other day. I feel bad for Mr. Sumlin, but we'll touch that later. But speaking of things that are Missouri adjacent, Brandon, do you know anything about a man named Rush Probst?
I know that he was on Two-A-Days back in the day, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Rush Probst was on Two-A-Days. That's where I first met him, obviously. He was also the coach at Valdosta State. Do you know where Valdosta State is?
It is in Georgia.
He's quite a good football coach at Valdosta. Now, there are some things wrong with Rush Probst. A lot of things wrong, actually. It's why he's kind of bounced around with some jobs. Some of them have to deal with how he treats players. Some of them is how he treats people. I believe he had two other families that didn't know about his other family. Like, basically not above board dude. Let's just call it that way, okay? But Mr. Probst was caught on audio talking to a man named Nub about Georgia recruiting and SEC recruiting in general. Now, again, you got to look at the source. The source is kind of a shady dude, shady character. Okay, we can take that for what it is. And from this recording from a couple of weeks ago, some of it is clearly just talking out his butt. He's talking about Bear Bryant Jr. running Alabama, which, okay, no duh. He's talking about Nick Saban's processes, which, okay, no duh. The interesting thing in the recording is that he talked specifically about Georgia recruiting, as in the University of Georgia recruiting the state of Georgia. And the thing that he mentioned was that Kirby Smart, one of the biggest appeals of Kirby to the Georgia administration, is that he is really good friends with a lot of old Georgia money. Found around Valdosta, found around Macon. And Mr. Probst dropped this little nugget saying that the Georgia football players that sign with Georgia tend to get somewhere between $90,000 and $100,000 to play football for the Bulldogs, including Nick Chubb, who he convinced to come back for a senior year, getting $180,000 to stick around. So we all know this is how it works, but I'll be honest, BK, my first reaction when I heard that Georgia was playing players $90,000 to play for Georgia, it's like, that's cheap. We could do that. What do you think of this this little interesting nugget of news here?
I think it's I'm going to choose my words carefully here. I think it is common sense to a lot of people that blue chip players come at a price at times, and that there are certain programs that are willing to meet that price. McDonald's bags. And so it would not surprise me if that is the case at some notable programs where you see a lot of blue chip players going. And I want to be very clear, this is not me bemoaning the fact that this is happening. I am just simply stating that it is happening.
What a very well-constructed, safe thing to say. I'm very impressed. You may keep your job, BK.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I like going to press conferences.
I know you do. I know you do. This is kind of the price of recruiting in the SEC, right? Recruiting is obviously way more national now than it has ever been. But let's be honest, the best football players tend to come from the South. Now, whether that's confirmation bias or truthfully, you know, the South just knows how to play ball, regardless of why, that's where the players are. And that's where SEC schools are, duh. So there's going to be a lot of kind of innate leverage of Southern SEC schools to be able to get these kind of kids. And that's why the SEC recruits so well as a conference year over year over year. It's why it's one of the toughest conferences to play in year over year over year. And that's why you see a lot of recruiting violations at schools year over year over year. Why do you think Hugh Freeze got Ole Miss out of the basement within 2 years? This sort of thing, right? This is what he did. We know it because we found out that he did it. Same, you know, if this is true for Georgia, so what? That's how this sort of thing works. So this is why a lot of schools that don't have operational budgets like a Georgia or an Alabama or an Auburn or a Texas or a Florida, this is why they go the route of 2- and 3-star guys. Find the diamonds in the rough, coach them up. Because not every program has the cash to distribute in a McDonald's bag to the 5-star recruit that you want to get. I'm not saying that's the only reason you lose out. I'm also not saying that's the only way you get these guys. I'm just saying that overall, you tend to have to pony up some cash. And if you want to play above board, if you want to play by the rules, you got to be really, really good at developing, because only a few programs can field an 85-man team at $90,000 a pop. Even if that is cheap, that is still expensive for a university football team.
Especially because it's consistent, right? Like if it was a one-off, exactly. Okay, yeah, we could, 100 G's, we can make that happen. If you're doing that 10 times over every year for a decade, okay, well, now we're talking about $1 million a year, and that becomes a little bit more of an operational budget there.
That's a lot of philanthropic giving. Let's just put it that way. Okay. A lot of philanthropic giving. Trying to boost up some young, hardworking gentlemen. So yeah, that's kind of where the big takeaway there was. And look, college football is always going to be dirty until the players can make money on their own. Like this is just the cost of doing business. I think, you know, the going rate of $90,000 is pretty sweet. What I don't understand is, number one, they should definitely be asking for more. $30,000 a year if you play for 4 years? Like, come on. But real quick, off the top of your head, BK, this is what doesn't – I didn't understand this. What does a practice squad player earn in the NFL in a year? Do you know?
I want to say it's like $150,000.
Yeah, $150,000-ish for a practice squad player. Is $150,000 more or less than $180,000?
Less.
Less, but not by a lot.
Yeah, so it's $200,000 this year.
There you go, $200,000. Well, $200,000 is $20,000 more than $180,000. Mm. Why the hell did Nick Chubb come back to Georgia for $180,000?
Well, it might have been less then. It might have been around the same.
But even then, he wasn't going to be a practice squad player.
No,
he was going to be drafted in the first round or maybe third round, but he was going to have a fat signing bonus and he was going to have some kind of multi-year contract. Like, it blows my mind that he came back to Georgia for that. That seems like highway robbery to me.
So here's something that we have to keep in mind, for what it's worth. Some kids actually really do like being in college.
That's true.
You know, like there are some guys that are like, yeah, you know, I could come back and hang out and be the big man on campus and maybe win a national title, especially at a place like Georgia. You're going to have an opportunity to do something like that. Maybe Nick Chubb just wanted to have a healthy year and be on campus for another year. You know, it's not totally out of the question.
That's a good point. And if you want to do something that you're already committed to doing and you get $180,000 on top of it, sure, why the hell not? That's pretty cool. But the communion plate at the Church of Georgia, it sure does get passed around a lot. That's impressive. So we'll get back to Missouri because that's what the podcast is about. We got the black and gold game this Saturday. It is reduced capacity. So make sure that you get your tickets. I think you go online. There's only a certain amount of tickets that are available. Concessions will be open. That's pretty cool. You do have to wear a mask unless you are eating or drinking, so keep that in mind. And you are going to be seated in pods of 2 to 4. So it'll be kind of selectively spread out. It doesn't sound like they're going to do like a black-gold scrimmage like Odom and Pinkel used to do. It sounds like there's going to be some situational plays and some drills, which – it tells you the same thing, guys. Like, you don't need to watch a black and gold game to get a good idea of what the team's doing.
In fact, sometimes more.
Yeah, you can sometimes learn more. You're absolutely right. So it's going to be a little bit different, obviously, with COVID, and obviously with just the setup of the day. But here's the cool part. You can go watch them, right? It's open. It's happening, unlike last year where it got canceled. So it's pretty cool. It's going to be the last practice for the spring until we pack things away, until we get to August. So get out there, support the team. I know, I guess Aaron Dryden is going to be there. I don't know if any of the Rock'em staff is going to be there, probably one of the beat guys. But get out there and take a look and tell us what you see, because it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, shoot us some tweets as well. Let us know what you're seeing out there. I think the biggest thing, like if I'm a fan going out there to watch on Saturday, the biggest things that I would want to see are confirmation that Mookie Cooper's awesome. I would want to see that. I would be paying attention to your secondary because that's going to be one of the biggest storylines of the season for Mizzou. And then I'd be watching the rotation along the defensive line to see if it continues to be as deep as it was previously. I would think that it would still be, but watch who's getting the reps. You will learn more about the team by watching who is playing with who than you will by specifically trying to evaluate them in an individual practice. Because there's guys that will have bad practices or good practices, but who they're playing with will tell you who the coaching staff is interested in seeing play with them. That's the biggest thing.
And for me, I know the offensive line is kind of purposefully in flux because Mike Maietti is kind of taking the spring off. But for me, I want to see the tackles. Hiron White is projected starting right. Zeke Powell is holding down the left. I wonder what kind of rotation of tackles they have on Saturday is. I wonder who they're handing off to. We didn't even talk about the running backs, but taking the majority of the snaps as the one? Is Elijah Young or Taj Butts or BJ, or I guess BJ Harris isn't on campus, but like, is there anyone pushing for starts in the backfield? Is Connor Bazelak connecting on deep routes? Who's running those deep routes? And then, of course, an opportunity to see Tyler Macon do Tyler Macon things with a number 10 on his back. So there's a lot of opportunity to check out stuff, and I hope you all enjoy it. And yeah, send us some tweets. Want to see what's going on while we sit here in St. Louis and dream about possibly what possible things that could be happening there. But any parting shots other than that, BK?
I don't think so, man. If you're somebody going out there to the spring game, enjoy it. Enjoy the fact that it is back this year. Enjoy the fact that we're able to do this time around. But otherwise, just enjoy Mizzou football, man. It's the last time that we're going to be able to see anything live from this team until the fall. So it should be a good time for anybody that's able to get out there.
So, yeah, that's the show for today. As always, we appreciate the downloads and the subscriptions. Leave a comment or rate us because we like all sorts of type of feedback that you can give us. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate G. Edwards. You can follow him at BK Sports Talk. You can listen to him on the radio, ESPN, 101 ESPN, 10 to 2. And, of course, you can follow Rockin' Flagship at Rockin' Nation. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then, M-I-Z.
C-O-U.